Do you want to know what's really fun about being a woman?
This is starting to sound like a Shania Twain song.
Man, I feel like I'm in perimenopause. Ugh, the brain fog, the mood swings, the night sweats, the unpredictable cycles. Many women enter perimenopause and they don't even realize what's happening to their body, and it's directly impacting how they're making major life decisions.
You get divorce strategy on this podcast, but when it comes to strategy for what's happening inside your body, our friends at Natural Cycles are here to help. Their new app mode, NC Perimenopause, within the Natural Cycles app interprets those hormonal shifts with data and science.
So I'm currently using the app and the intel is fascinating. It doesn't just track symptoms. It helps me see patterns and it helps me connect the dots between my hormones, my symptoms, and my lifestyle. It even estimates what stage of perimenopause I'm in. I love that it helps me better understand what's going on with my body and why I have days where it's more difficult to make decisions than others. And that clarity really matters. You can even download a personalized report that you can bring to your doctor, which makes those appointments way more productive.
Natural Cycles is a female-founded digital health company that analyzes biomarker data to help users better understand their cycles. NC Perimenopause is for anyone experiencing or anyone who thinks they may be experiencing perimenopause, from the first hormone-related changes to your cycle or symptoms all the way until menopause, when your periods stop. Learn more and give it a shot right alongside Andrea.
Yes, let's do this thing together. You are not alone in your divorce or this transition. There are tools to help you make sense of what your body is doing. Visit naturalcycles.com and use code DIVORCE. Or tap the link in the show notes to learn more about how you can save on a subscription.
The How Not to Suck a Divorce podcast cannot be copied or rebroadcast without consent. This podcast does not contain legal advice. The information contained herein and provided on the podcast and the resources available are not intended and shall not be construed as legal advice. And with that, enjoy the show.
Whether you're navigating a high conflict divorce
or just trying to feel like you're not sucking at a sucky process, our Family Wizard is our pro tip that you must check out.
It's a co-parenting app that, if used correctly, will help you stop texting your ex.
No more passive-aggressive messages blowing up your phone while you're trying to work.
Tip from a divorce attorney, go sign up for their newsletter.
You'll get access to a special article written just for our listeners. Go to ourfamilywizard.com/notsuck. That's ourfamilywizard.com/notsuck.
This is the only divorce podcast that's one part family law attorney and one part recovering comedian. We're dedicated to bringing you action steps, empathy, and a healthy side of snark. This is How Not to Suck at Divorce.
It's another re-air, folks, but this time we have probably one of the most important episodes maybe we ever recorded. And we've re-aired this a few times, and it's probably, I think it might have been one of my least favorite topics to cover, which is probably because it's the most important.
Yeah, you're probably right about that. It's also related to if you have children, you look at those as your most important asset. So it can be a little triggering, but it's also a place that you can't make mistakes. So that's why it's so important, and we keep re-airing.
Right. So we're talking about the parenting agreement. And this episode that initially aired a few seasons ago, we brought on an amazing guest who's been on our show several times. Her name is Dr. Melissa Tigas. And she's a psychologist out of Florida who specializes in the relationship between co-parents and each other and with the child. And one of the things that we talk about is mistakes that people tend to make in their parenting agreement because they're not looking at this through the lens of what's really going to be best for their kid. And when we first recorded it, I had gone through the process myself. I had not renegotiated my own parenting agreement yet, which I had made many mistakes on. I remember feeling like vomit in my throat while we were talking about things that people do that you shouldn't do, thinking, oh, fuck, I did this. Oh, fuck, I did this. And so if you are in that spot, please take a breath and know that there are steps that you can take to change some things. It's not easy, but we want you to have all the knowledge, but don't beat yourself up it and don't think, oh, too little, too late.
And if you are in the beginning stages of a divorce or thinking about a divorce with children, this is the episode for you to start your process of thinking, what can I do to make sure that I don't make mistakes? And Andrea and I are thrilled because we're going into the summer months. We're excited. We're taking a break from our podcast for at least a month just to kind of come up with new, fresh information for you. That doesn't mean we will be taking a break from social media. It's just new episodes will be not coming out for that month. They'll be re-airs. But before we do that, we thought about the fact of something I'm seeing a lot lately legally, which is there are a lot of creative things that people are doing in their parenting agreement, whether it's temporary or full-time, only related to summer months. And so we have decided that after this episode, we will be specially airing a short episode on creative ways to negotiate terms for the summer months with your children and your ex.
That's exactly right. And if you don't already have your little paws wrapped around our divorce crash course, you guys, you want to get your hands on this project of ours. Our divorce crash course was written to help you mitigate these mistakes that can cost you so much freaking money and so much time and so much agony. So please go to that direct link that's in our show notes. Click on that button to get the divorce crash course. It is worth every single little penny.
And without further ado, let's hop into our episode.
All right. If you guys have been listening to this podcast from the very beginning with us, then you are well aware that the topic of the parenting agreement is my least favorite thing to talk about. I hate it. I hate everything about the parenting agreement. I hate that it's called a parenting agreement. It feels so unnatural to me to have to sign a document that talks about when you have your children, when you don't have your children. I can almost never get through an episode where we talk about this when I don't break down in tears. So this is going to be really fun. But in all seriousness, this is a really important topic and probably the most important part of your divorce process if you have children.
Right. I mean, listen, guys, nobody enjoys the parenting agreement. As a family law attorney and a mother, it's a tough document, but it's an important document and crucial to the divorce process. There has to be a guideline and in a place where you and your former spouse will decide where the children will reside, how the parenting time works out, holidays, and decision-making. This is a big deal that you can't and you don't want to make mistakes on.
Yep. It's absolutely true. And I think that that's one of the reasons why it feels so heavy, you know, because you're like, oh my gosh, this is major. What if I do something wrong? But you guys are in luck because today we are so honored to have on Dr. Tigges, a licensed clinical and forensic psychologist with over 10 years of experience working as a psychotherapist and an evaluator in the Miami, Florida area. She has worked with clients with a wide range of concerns, including depression, anxiety, relationship issues, substance abuse, parenting problems, family discord. I have to take a breath here. Holy cow, that's a lot. She also heads a team of people who help parents who are going through a divorce make the best decisions possible while organizing their parenting agreement. Dr. Tigges, hi. I am so excited that you are on this show. Truly, I am really, really honored to have this conversation with you and just to kind of help everybody understand what they can do to ensure that their parenting agreement really puts their kids first.
Absolutely. Oh my gosh. Thank you so much for having me, ladies. I'm really excited to be here. I am a psychologist, but I've done a lot of interesting jobs over my career. I started out as a investigator for Child Protective Services in Texas, and then I went into being a special education teacher. And with those different jobs, I was just trying to do something to prevent future problems and issues. And I think that's why I became a psychologist, because as a social worker or a teacher, you're not really preventing things at that end. That's also reactive, you know? I just thought, what better way to prevent problems and issues than to approach them from like a psychological perspective? So I feel like very connected to you both. I value this podcast because I think that we're all invested in the same thing. It's just helping people, you know, giving them some tools and resources to help them prevent future problems, to not suck at whatever they're trying to do. So thank you for having me.
Thank you, Dr. Tigges. You know, we've talked about it a lot, but it's really important for Andrea and myself that we're giving our listeners action steps. So let's frame this conversation today as what divorcing couples need to understand while they're in this process trying to put together their parenting agreement. Legally, from my perspective, you know, we think of this parenting agreement as somewhat fluid. And it's really important for me as a lawyer to understand how old the children are when somebody comes to me. And the reason I say that is in my business, what may work for a 3-year-old in a parenting agreement may not work for a 13-year-old. So the plan you sign has to be appropriate for where your children are developmentally, but you also have to plan for the future. So tell us a little bit more about how that works with regard to what you do.
So you asked earlier, you know, what must divorcing couples understand when they're in the process of putting together their parenting agreement? I think the most important thing to understand is what is in the best interests of their child. And a lot of people don't really understand that concept. I think best interest actually means that the decisions that you make for the child, the most basic part of that standard is that it should serve the child's health and well-being and not the parents necessarily. So I think, you know, in my experience, the parenting plan is almost always written to accommodate the parents' needs, you know, their needs for their custody or the time sharing schedule that works best for them or the location where the children should reside. And it doesn't often consider the burdens that are being placed on these children that they literally didn't ask for. You know, they didn't ask to be a product of a separated or divorced household. And these burdens that we're placing them under with these parenting plans can have a really long-lasting impact on them. So I think that's the most important thing to understand, that the parenting plan really must consider specifically the child's needs. That's the one document that needs to be focused mainly and solely on them.
Now, guys, just to interrupt you just for a moment here, Dr. Tigges. If you're listening to this and you're starting to feel defensive and irked because of what you just heard, stay with us, okay? We're not saying that this is something where we're like, you did something wrong because you want to make sure that this parenting agreement is in alignment with your work schedule. We're all humans, right?
Right.
Naturally, we're all going to think about, well, how am I going to make this work? How am I going to do this? I get it. And not letting you guys know, I went through this. I made so many mistakes when I did my parenting agreement. But that's why it is so important that we're having this conversation. So as Dr. Tigges continues, please just try to keep an open mind and while we talk about this, because there's going to be a lot of things that you hear that might kind of feel conflicting to you based on what you've heard before or what you might be talking about with your own attorney right now. So just be mindful of that. Okay, let's keep going.
Alternative forms of resolution. That's what I'm coming with today. So yeah, I mean, a parenting plan is a contract between the parents that's approved by the courts. And I agree that it should be fluid, but it does like set things in stone, which I think does cause some difficulties down the line. Because if the parenting plan really did consider the best interests of the children, it would be a living document, in my opinion, something that can be like edited and updated later because kids and families grow and their needs are going to change over time. You know, to your point, Morgan, definitely younger children are at a different stage of development. They have different needs than older kids. For example, they really can't tolerate a lot of time away from their caregiver that they're primarily attached and bonded to. And teenagers require a parenting plan that might consider their needs for, you know, time with their friends. Yeah, that's a very important part of their adolescence. And so I don't think any two parenting plans should look alike because no two families are alike.
Okay. I love you already because this is exactly what I talk to my clients about. I have a case right now where, you know, my client has a 3-year-old and a 1.5-year-old. And they're trying to do, the ex is trying to do this plan where, you know, the kids are really away from both of them for longer periods of time. And I tried to say to them, listen, the research suggests that more touch points are better at a younger age. When they get a little older or they're in their teens, they want to be with their friends. They don't really mind the long periods, but when they're little,
they need more touch points than some of our parenting plans in the past probably suggested. Do you agree with that research?
Absolutely. You know, younger children require more contact with both of their parents. It's really hard for them to tolerate those long distances apart. And the older children are going to be able to tolerate that long span of time away from mom and dad.
So I want to touch on something else that you mentioned that kind of got me starting to sweat already over here. You said that it should be a living, breathing document, right? That's easily modified. Boy, do I wish that that were the case. But it is so freaking hard to modify parenting agreements. It just is. And that is something that is another topic for another show, because there's not a whole lot that can be done about that at this time. So with that in mind, how can somebody go about making sure that their parenting agreement, again, because I hate that word, but how can they make sure that it is in the best interest of their kid? What do they do? Who do they talk to? What do they do?
I mean, well, I'm a psychologist, so maybe I'm biased in saying this. I do think that psychologists and therapists would know what's developmentally appropriate for kids. You know, we are required to take a lot of courses on those things, lifespan, human development, child psychology. But also, we really should only be making recommendations for people that we're directly evaluating or treating. So in that lies a relationship that was formed, like a therapeutic relationship. And that is how we ensure that our recommendations for those people that we're working with are appropriate, because they're based on the history of that client, that family, and it's considering their specific needs because we've been working with them for a while. So I feel that it is important to speak to a therapist whenever you're making the decision and involving and creating a parenting agreement. I know that sounds very strange. I'm very pro-therapy in general. I think we can all benefit from some therapy in our lives. Am I right? But if you're worried or weary of participating in like psychotherapy, you know, there is a service that's kind of less of a therapy service and more of like a co-parenting counseling that helps them to just improve the communication between them, but also can be used to help them to develop or modify their parenting agreements.
When you mentioned about somebody seeking out a therapist, are you recommending that they seek out a child psychologist or someone who works with children specifically, or like how, like if they're like, okay, I'm open to this therapy idea, you know, to help me figure out this process?
I don't think it could hurt for the parents to engage a child psychologist if that child psychologist has, you know, met with the child and it understands the unique needs of that child. That person could certainly be a good resource to ask for recommendations about what type of schedule or arrangement would best suit that particular child. But I do think that a co-parenting therapist, which is a mental health professional with some experience working with families involved in the family court, high conflict separation and divorce, they're going to be a better resource because they have that experience working with those families, you know, in addition to their psychology background. I do think that a lot of people know of co-parenting therapy, but that's because they were either ordered to attend it by the family court in their county, or they heard of someone who was ordered to attend it. But these referrals usually come after litigating already about issues, sometimes for years. So I feel like we're coming in too late. I'm proposing that parents are utilizing this service as soon as they decide to separate or divorce, and that they hire a therapist to provide them with this counseling before taking their issues to court, because that's where the judge is going to make the final ruling on their lives. I think parents can work together with an experienced professional who's hired to understand them and help them draft that parenting plan agreement. And then they can take that agreement and present it to their attorney, or that they mutually hired or hired separately, who can file it, or they can actually notarize it and file it themselves with the family court. I don't know what you think about that one, Morgan, but this is how, if you meet with a mental health professional with that experience, that's how your family's, you know, unique circumstances would be considered in drafting that parenting agreement.
Okay, so a lot to unpack there. And yeah, I want to first point out the fact that there are major differences from where I practice to where Dr. Tigges is at. And Dr. Tigges, some of the things you said are really unique to where you are, at least from what my understanding is of the law in the different states, and really cool. you know, one of the things, we do a lot of co-parenting therapy where I am in Chicagoland area. What we don't do is automatically hire a therapist to go through a parenting agreement and work out, you know, the best things that could happen for your children, depending at what age. I think it's kind of genius. I think it's a really good, smart idea, because I do think that parents would put down their swords more if they understood what their child needed at that certain age. And if you get in front of it before people get positional, I think legally they would kind of calm down a little bit more and make some good decisions there. But the one thing that you did say, you know, that we cannot do, at least in Illinois, is we are not able to have one lawyer represent two people. So it would make it real easy, but it is not available. Either you have to represent yourself or you have to have your own lawyer. So that's just one difference where we are. So again, for our listeners, it all depends on where you are. But I think the takeaway from what Dr. Tiggs is saying legally is that if there's an option where you can get with a therapist to talk about your, you know, your child or children's needs, depending on their age, right when you're embarking on this divorce process, why wouldn't you? We've always talked about tools in your toolbox. That's another tool. Andrea, do you think that that is something that would have been helpful for you?
Absolutely. You know, this really, I keep thinking back, Morgan, to an episode that we did last season with Dr. Randy Heller, when we talked about how people need to view co-parenting like a business, right? And you shouldn't look at this idea of like co-parenting therapy as we're all going to sit around on the floor in a drum circle and sing kumbaya and hold hands and, you know, chant. It's really like, okay, I hate this girl. I hate this guy. Fine. I get it. But the fact of the matter is there are children involved. You're going to have to figure out how you work together. What are you going to do? We don't want these children to suffer. They're going to suffer, right? Because divorce just, it just sucks. We all know this. But if we're going to help you suck less at the process, we're going to minimize how much agony your children go through. So I think having some kind of referee, parameters, whatever, set on, okay, we got to figure this out, people. We're going to figure out how we do this. I think it would help make this whole process of putting a parenting agreement so much more collaborative. Because I think what's wrong, especially where we live, Morgan, is it's like person A puts together what they want and communicates to their attorney. Person B puts down what they want, communicates it to their attorney. Then the attorneys talk together and they're hashing out who gets what, which really puts it in like this, the eyes of like, I want this, but she wants that, or I want this, but he wants that. You know what I mean?
I totally know what you mean.
As a parent, yeah, this is what we should do for the children.
Here's what I have started doing. This is kind of interesting because I keep finding exactly what you're saying is happening. It's like the first person who makes the first proposal is like, no matter what, the other person is upset by it. They're upset for two reasons. One is because it didn't come from them. And the second reason is because they don't know what to expect. So anything that comes over as a proposal, because this is foreign to them, is so upsetting.
Right.
So a lot of times now what I'm doing, if the other side is really kind of creative and open-minded, I say, let's put together a parenting agreement, but let's leave all the major issues that we have to figure out blank so that they can see this is the roadmap of what you will ultimately enter into. But all these things are up for discussion. So then no one's getting positional. And then we could do something with, you know, Dr. Tiggs, or we could get together, or we could go to mediation. We could do all these things rather than being positional.
I think that what you said is absolutely right, but I want to kind of clarify something, because what you said is right. If you weren't the one who came up with the idea for like, this is what I want in a parenting agreement, you're going to get defensive. But it's not as simple or as black and white as saying like, it's because it wasn't my idea. It's because the nature of a parenting agreement is so disruptive to like our souls as parents, right? So for me, I mean, like, this is why I already feel like the tears are coming, But there is something so unnatural about a document that talks about when you're going to have your kids. Mother effer, why? Why am I crying?
I know.
Every time, you guys, it's stupid at this point. But it feels so unnatural, right? To like think about, I'm signing a legal document that talks about when I'm not going to see my children. It makes it feel like you're going to prison, right?
Yeah.
And like these words like visitation and this and that, you're like, yeah. Mm-hmm. But I think that it kind of puts salt in that wound when it's the ex, soon to be ex-spouse who sends that first draft over, right? And then you kind of feel like they're telling you when you're not going to see your kids, which automatically puts you in this really funky place emotionally.
So why did we start this show? Well, to help save you money in your divorce. Actually, more than that, I want to help save you money and avoid major mistakes in your divorce. How does that sound?
And that is exactly why we created the Divorce Crash Course. And guys, this divorce course is different than any other divorce course out there because it's easy to understand, it's fast, it's entertaining, and it's effective. So along with 5 short videos, we give you a printable guidebook that's going to keep you on track and organized throughout your entire divorce process. And I know that Morgan's not going to brag about herself, so I'll go ahead and do it. You guys are going to be getting guidance from one of our country's top family law attorneys at a fraction of her hourly rate. And I'll be honest with you, we did not launch this course for the money, because if we were doing this thing for the money, we'd be charging a whole lot more than $97.
Exactly. And so for only $97, which yes, is a fraction of the cost of most family law attorneys' hourly rates, you'll have all the tools you'll need to be the most efficient in your divorce process. And friends, this course will help you at any stage in your divorce process. And if you're worried about how this may show up on your credit card, we've got this. The credit card charge will show up as DCC 150.
But more than save you money, you guys. I don't want you to make the mistakes that I made when I got divorced. And I don't want you to suffer or your kids to suffer unnecessarily. So go check out the Divorce Crash Course. www.thedivorcecrashcourse.com. Direct link in our show notes.
And Morgan, you and I talk about this all the time when how, you know, we encourage our listeners to not make decisions when they're emotionally charged, right? But the problem is you are always going to be emotionally charged when it comes to your kids. You just are. And if you aren't, then there's another issue there. But, you know, and I think, so I really think that the idea of having someone to help couples who are, you know, choosing this path for their lives, figure out, okay, how do we do this together? How do we do this? Because I remember correctly, I don't think that I was the one who sent out the first draft for a parenting agreement. And I do remember feeling like, oh my God, like what? And naturally then you want to kind of like fight back and it puts you in that really negative space. So
I know you have a question for Dr. Tigges, but I will say one last thing before we go on to the next question, which is regarding the parenting agreement. If you know as a person that there's a parenting agreement going to come over to you at some point, usually your lawyer will say, this is the next step. We are expecting to receive a parenting agreement. Ask your lawyer to give you a roadmap of what that may look like before you receive it. They can leave blanks, they can do whatever. So then you can see, okay, this is what it looks like. These are where the blanks are going to come in and this other side is going to fill those in so that when you get it, the only real shocker will be what the proposal is in those specific things. It won't be the language that's really normal language that you just don't know it's normal and that's upsetting you. So take that as a step one.
Yep. I agree. And I would also say, Morgan, this might be a time when it would be advantageous to pay your attorney a little extra to talk through this with you, right?
Oh, yeah.
Maybe it's not something that you just open up an email after you've had a few margaritas on a Thursday night.
Right.
Like, that's not the best time, you guys. If you take away one thing from this episode, don't open that email after you've had a few drinks because it's not going to go over well. Am I right?
or just draft and don't send. Draft your response and don't send.
I mean, I just think that it's, yeah. Okay. So I want to shift this a little bit. I want to talk about issue, like when we're going through a divorce where there's higher conflict, right? So let's say there's already swords being drawn, arrows are being thrown, things are going on. This to me feels like, okay, then this is probably an even more important time to have some kind of therapy. What do you think we can say right now to these listeners? Like, I think what happens is these listeners could be like, the idea of going to therapy right now with this mother effer is not going to happen, right? Because they hear therapy and they think like, let's all come together.
Yes. So
what can we say to them right now to help them understand that, no, this is for you?
I mean, co-parenting therapy, if you can't do it, then your case is just going to end up in court. Because if you cannot agree with each other, then you have to have a judge make your decisions, right? The thing is like the parenting plan, it's a mutual agreement. It's supposed to be the contract of the parents. And I want people to understand that it is a contract, but if you and the other person are in agreement about what, you know, about deviating from that contract, you're allowed to do so. It's when you're not in agreement that you must follow what you signed. And so, you know, my response to that is, what do we do if we don't want to do therapy? It just feels too invasive. You know, you can hire an attorney, and you absolutely should if your rights are being violated. Like, I'm pro attorney for representing your rights, but your attorney will present your case to the judge and the judge will decide for you what happens in your lives. If you go to a co-parenting therapy, however, if you invest your time and your energy in that service, you can actually work out a lot of disagreements before turning it over to a judge. That just allows you to retain some decision-making power in your life still, because if you take it to a judge, they will make that decision for you in the form of a ruling. And it will consider what you have argued, but at the end of the day, it's what the judge decides. I think the whole point of co-parenting therapy is to help these parents to communicate better so they can just make some agreements together. And even if that's slight modifications to an existing parenting plan, and it's really, the incentive is that it saves you grief, time and money, like so much money. Honestly, therapists are less expensive than attorneys. And so I want everybody to give it a try first. Yeah. Just try that first before litigating about issues in court. And then if you have to go to court, then you have to go to court. Like, it's understandable that that is what it is. But I always want people to try this first, because I feel that this is a type of service that's going to prevent, or hope, aim to prevent future litigation rather than participating in it.
Okay, a few things legally. One is, I would say that what Dr. Tigges is saying is awesome. I would like to see a client have representation while seeing Dr. Tigges so that we're working legally, but also the emotional side. If Dr. Tigges can settle your matter, wonderful, beautiful, but you always want to check it with your lawyer and see, okay, if I settle on this, what does this mean for me and the other factors in my case? You just don't want to do something in a vacuum. So that's number one. The second thing I want to touch on is a lot of people come to me and what they're really stressed out about is, what could the schedule be, right? It could be, what are the courts doing? What could the schedule be? Is every other weekend something that's appropriate? We joke that every other weekend is the bad mom or bad dad schedule. I mean, that is like the lowest amount, at least where I am, of parenting time that somebody could probably get absent some really extenuating circumstances. So what are most people wanting now? Well, all we hear about all day long in my business is 50-50, 50-50, 50-50. And there's some 50-50 schedules that are different. There's about three that are really common. And one that we always hear once in a while being talked about is the week on week off schedule. And it's kind of controversial. So a lot of people come and they want this week on week off parenting schedule. And what I tell them is two things, and I want to get your take on it, Dr. Tigges. The first thing I tell them is, number one, absent an agreement of some sort and your child probably being a little older, most courts are never going to do this, never, because it's too long away from the other side.
Yeah, good.
I'm glad that you're agreeing with me. Yeah. And so I tell them that, and some people are just shocked by it. And I just want to get your thoughts on if somebody is demanding or both sides want a 50-50, I mean, what is best for the children research-wise?
Research, there is no specific type of time sharing schedule for any particular age or stage of development of child. It really is a case-by-case basis. And whenever I'm tasked with making a decision in the child's best interest, I'm reviewing what's published online as the best interest factors. You know, this is a Florida statute thing, but I think the reason the week on, week off is unhealthy for kids and why it's considered controversial is because it's the simplest, therefore the easiest 50-50 schedule for parents. And I know a lot of parents want to have that equal time with their kids, which I feel is understandable. But they also want a schedule that's convenient for their family, which is also understandable. The problem is, I think 50-50 being the gold standard doesn't always consider the best interest of the children, because we're just slapping a basic, you know, consistent schedule on the children. You have to remember, best interest of children is what is the healthiest decision for them. It's not necessarily what's the parent wants or what is even most convenient for the parents.
So I have one other follow-up on that for you. It basically comes down to this. You know, what I see in my cases is that the child or children need to know week to week where they're going to be and when. And for younger children, it's much harder. I always say, put a calendar up, you know, this is mom's day, this is dad's day. But the flip-flopping of those days week to week is really difficult for a child. And from what I always tell my clients is, if they know every Thursday is dad's day, that's helpful for them. Do you feel the same way? So it's not flip-flopping, you know, week to week, every other week, that kind of thing.
50-50 can be not schedules that are not week on, week off. Like 50-50 can be a 2-2-3. You know, I really like those. The issue with those is the parents do have to have some level of ability to co-parent when there's more. What did you call them, Morgan? Touch points?
Touch points.
Yeah. Touch points. If there's more touch points, then the demand for the parents to really cooperate with each other is going to be higher. So those parents of really young children do have to kind of get it together to exercise a time sharing schedule that is considerate of the child's needs, to not be separated from one or the other for too long. And so therefore they have to communicate a lot and see each other a lot more. There's a lot more exchanges throughout the week.
Right. And when you're talking about a 2-2-3, that is one parent having Monday, Tuesday every week, one parent having Wednesday, Thursday every week, and then flip-flopping the weekends or alternating the weekends. And so that's how it goes. If you map it out, let's just say for our listeners, always map it out where you're the Monday, Tuesday, and then your spouse is the Wednesday, Thursday, and you alternate the weekends. So you can kind of wrap your head around the schedule that Dr. Tigges is talking about.
But let me just add to that, that with that schedule, you're still going to go for 5 days without seeing your kids. Unless you put in there, which I can speak from experience, that you can put in your parenting agreement that during that 5-day stretch, if it's a weekend with mommy, then daddy gets the kids from this time to this time every Saturday. Or from this time to this time every Sunday, whatever you guys agree on. And some people will say, and I can say, that is what I have in my schedule for my revised parenting agreement, which I did. I was able to change mine after 2 years or almost 2 years, and it took a lot of heartache and a lot of money, but it was really important that we both had something that worked better for our children. People will say, well, gosh, that's so disruptive into your weekend. What if you have weekend plans? And again, that brings us back to the point. It's not about your mother, but weekend plans. It's about your kids. Your kids are your plans. Now, if there's a weekend when you're going to go and have a girls' trip in Cabo or whatever, okay, well, then that weekend, you're not going to see your kids, and that's fine. And then you're going to go for 5 days. If it's a one-off, fine. Mm-hmm. But from my standpoint, on a regular basis, you have to think about your children. And my kids are small. Neither myself or their father is comfortable going for that long without seeing the kids. So yeah. I do think that it's really important. And again, I think that if you do some type of co-parenting therapy or you have someone help facilitate this negotiation, they're going to help you put these markers in place and help explain, like, let's say you're for this, but then your ex is giving you pushback, right? I don't want to do this. I don't want to do this. It's annoying. It's too stressful, too hard to remember. Then you're going to have someone who's going to help explain why these things are so important. And again, for a lot of people who are getting along, a parenting agreement is just a guideline to fall back on, right? Mm-hmm. But for couples who, or for former couples who are not getting along, a lot of times these parenting agreements have to be followed to the letter of the law because they aren't going to communicate. So if you fall into that category, then you have got to go through the process the right way. And I'm going to go out on a limb and say the right way is to have a therapist help you. The wrong way is to just make this decision one night, send it to your attorney, and get this thing done. You cannot rush through this process. Do you guys agree with me here?
Absolutely. And I feel that working with a therapist that has a little bit of experience, maybe has received a lot of referrals from the family court or works with individuals that have been involved in litigation in the family court, is really the best. I know that that's not maybe always available in every community, but that really is the best person for the job. They are going to be able to explain from what I try to do is explain from the psychological perspective, like logistically, if you chose this schedule, this would be the potential impact to the children. Kind of like what you just said, okay, this 2-2-3 is really great, but do you realize that what it does is on certain weekends, you're going to be away from your child for a 5-day period. And some parents really don't know that. And I do think that it helps to have an objective, neutral third party just kind of explain like how this actually works out in your day-to-day life and how it will actually affect the kids.
I couldn't agree more. Could not agree more. And my question for you is, you know, I always recommend getting a lawyer right away because a lawyer will have good recommendations for co-parenting therapy. But let's just say they're not there yet. They just want to go straight to co-parenting therapy and they want to find this fantastic diamond in the rough. Where do they go to find a co-parenting therapist in their area? Where do they even start?
I believe the best place to go is actually ask the court. I know that, and the attorneys, because the attorneys are the ones that are routinely working with the clients. And if an attorney doesn't have, I guess, a little Rolodex of mental health professionals that they can call, they might be having a very stressful time of being an attorney. You know,
totally.
So I think that they should have a few like on hand in the community. I always am asked by any judge or attorney, you know, for recommendations in that area. I still think that a good therapist with even just child and family marriage counseling experience could give you some solid recommendations. They may not understand logistically how certain timesharing schedules work, but after getting to know your family and your specific unique needs and problems, they can make some recommendations about like, well, I think Johnny might not be able to handle that kind of schedule because of his issues or whatever.
And I'll say this, guys, if you're listening and you don't know where to go, message us. We'll do the work to help put you in the right direction. That's one of the reasons why we're here. So send us a message on our Instagram page, email us from our website. Morgan and I will find you somebody who can help.
I totally agree. We have jumped through a million hoops to get people, lawyers, therapists, et cetera, the best in the community. We do have the connections and we will work with you. We won't stop till you're happy. So
I'll say that you jumped through hoops, Morgan. I'm just the one who tells you. I'll send you a screenshot and I'm like, oh my God, this person needs help. Here you go.
We all have our place. Andrea deals with most of the DMs. Most people do not DM me, but I'll handle all the referrals.
That's right. That's right. It's a balance. It's a balance. Yeah.
So Dr. Tigas, we are so glad that we are able to have this conversation today. And there's so much more. We just literally scratched the surface on this. But I think what you said about the fact that your education was in child therapy. I mean, you know, you've dealt with divorce cases. You're dealing with best interests. I mean, you are the perfect person to sit down with two parents who are struggling and say, this is what, you know, who we're calling little Johnny. This is what little Johnny needs right now. So we should do it this way. It's a good way to let the parents kind of take a step back because Andrea, you said earlier before we even got on this podcast. Children aren't cattle, right?
Yep. These are kids, not cattle. And I think what's hard is like, you get into this idea where you think that it's a possession. Because, I mean, Morgan, isn't that what people argue over? I mean, I always think of the case that you had years ago where they were fighting over condiments, right? Like, she actually litigated ketchup bottles.
That's right.
I think we get into that mindset of like, what's mine, what's yours? And we gotta not do that with the kids.
Agreed. I agree with that 100%. So Dr. Tegas, let's talk about our must do's. So let's just say that they're starting out as there's a couple, Jane Doe and John Doe, and they have little Johnny, and they're starting out and they need to figure out how to make the best parenting agreement for them. So what are your to do's on things that they should start to think about at the early process?
I definitely think do sign up for a co-parenting therapy. It's not like couples counseling, you know, you're not rekindling any romance. You will discuss some, you know, intimate private issues, but really they're just taking that history down so they can give appropriate recommendations. So I feel that's really helpful in the beginning of the process and may prevent your case from even ending up in the family court. You know, they're just going to help you work on communication so that you can, you know, prevent these issues in these conflicts that always happen in separation or divorce. And you know, I just feel very strongly that it helps to retain some of that decision-making power. If you take your case to the court, the judge will make the decision. I laugh because there's this family court judge out of Broward that he's famous in my mind because I once heard him talking to some litigants during an open case management conference. And he said to this litigant who just did not want to work with their ex, like, well, then why did you engage the United States government in your personal affairs? Like, you didn't want me to make the decisions for you. You should have chosen to co-parent, you know, at that point. So if you do engage in this type of service early on, then you can actually, you know, make these decisions for your life. It's a collaborative process. The therapist is making recommendations. They're not setting things in stone. They're just listening to you both and making good recommendations that they think would work best for your family. And then you as the parties agree on that. Obviously, that's not like something that works for all people. We can't save them all. But if you do voluntarily participate in this service, it really can save you a lot in terms of time, energy, grief, stress, money.
Yep.
All of those things.
I would say something else that I would add to your must do's is change your outlook and mindset on what this is all about, right? Like, don't look at this agreement. It's an agreement for your children. Take the parent part out of it. It's not about you. It's not about what's best for your schedule and what's not good for his schedule or whatever. This is about what's going to work for your kids. So I think that we always joke around. We say, like, if you blacked out during this episode and you just now came to, remember this. And I think that we're all on the same page here where you can't do this alone. You shouldn't do this alone. So get an expert to help you figure out what's going to be the most effective agreement for your children. That somebody who takes into consideration how old they are, what their lives are like, what activities are they doing, and what's going to work best for your family. Right?
Absolutely. And remember that if you are engaged, like, this service can happen for people at the beginning of the divorce process, but also after a parenting plan has already been put in place that's just not working for you anymore. And if you've already established a relationship with a experienced therapist, you can always go back to them later. For example, I tell my former clients, I have a little bit of an open door policy. Like, I would rather you call me, let's do one or two maintenance sessions and help you get over this snag that you're on where you're at an impasse, you cannot get past it, rather than taking it to court. If what we do doesn't work out and you must, then okay, but that should really be the last resort. Let's try to amicably resolve these issues in this service first. So someone that you can even go back and use to modify the agreements later.
I love
Okay.
That.
Again, I've already told you this, but I already love you even more. And the reason is, and we're going to end on this, because she just talked about maintenance sessions. And that's something creative that not everybody does. And it's super important because if you know that you could just talk to Dr. Tigges one or two more times because you already have a relationship and she already knows little Johnny and she already knows big Johnny, mm-hmm. and she already knows you. And it's like, she'll just get you to the deal and like figure it out whether you're right, wrong, or, you know, on the left-hand side, it doesn't matter, but it will get it done rather than going the next step to court. Because I always say, you don't know what side of the bed the judge woke up on. You don't know whether they lean left, right, or in the middle. You have no idea. So the point is, think creatively, think outside of the box, and talk to your lawyer about those creative solutions, because that's the person that's going to guide you. No question is dumb. No question shouldn't be asked. If it's on your mind, great, ask it, but also always end, and my recap is always ask your lawyer, what can we do to be more creative to get me to a better solution?
Such a good point. Such a good point. And one thing that I'm going to add to what you just said, Morgan, not only could the judge have woken up on the wrong side of the bed, but the judge doesn't want to make these decisions. The judge, this is not right. That's their job. They don't want to do this. They're going to be irked that they have to do this, because judges are not bad people. They want what's best for the kids. But what all that you're showing them is, we couldn't do the work on our, we couldn't make this happen. We couldn't make this happen. So here, you figure it out. The judge doesn't know you. They don't know the kids. And they are inundated with so many things that they have to do. Don't add this to their list. This is something that you really have to do everything in your power. Please listen to me on this, you guys, because I made a lot of mistakes. So I'm telling you that I know. You got to do everything in your power. Exhaust every single effort possible before you let somebody else make a decision about what's best for your family.
Yes.
Agreed. Dr. Tigges, you were wonderful. And we look forward to follow-up conversations, because you're so creative and you are so well qualified. So thank you for coming on the How Not to Suck at Divorce podcast.
Honestly, thank you for having me.
You are so welcome. If we have listeners who want to know more about you and want to reach out, where can they find you online?
So my Instagram handle, TikTok, Facebook, all things social media handle is the same. It's at Dr. Dr. Melissa, spelled M-A-L-I-S-S-A, Tigges, T-I-G-G-E-S, all one word, Dr. Melissa Tigges. And then if you go to my Instagram page, it has a link tree with my actual contact info if you want to contact me or reach me for expert or consultation or clinical services. So thank you, ladies, so much for having me. I really hope this helps.
Oh my God. And just to reiterate, you are licensed in the Florida area only right now. Is that correct?
Correct. Yes. Okay. But there are some states that clinical services you can provide to other individuals remotely. And there's a reciprocity in a lot of states for clinical services as well.
Okay. So guys, if you need some guidance, reach out to her, reach out to us. We will put you in touch with someone who can help you. Thank you so, so much for being here with us.
Thank you. Yes. Thank you, ladies.
Wow. She was great, wasn't she?
It was a good conversation. Very important.
I know it was hard for you too. So I'm glad that you got through that. I know every time we plan these episodes where it's something related to the parenting agreement, you just cringe, but you're a trooper. And I appreciate that, because I know our listeners need this.
Our listeners did need it. And you know what? You gave me some levity, because listening to you try to say the word controversial was really, it added to my evening.
I think I've been working now for 24 hours.
So you poor thing.
I'm over it.
Controversial. Oh, Morgan, what you got? What you got to round out?
All right. So good news movement over here.
And now, a moment of positivity.
Because we're all about positive thoughts.
And negative COVID tests.
That is right.
So, you know, there's been a lot of stuff in the world. I mean, just not good stuff. And it's just like every day you wake up, it's just not always great. It's hard to look at the news. But here's a few things. I mean, usually we start with one good news thing. I've got three quick ones, all medical related, that are positives in the world and something for all of us to look forward to. Okay, first medical one. There's been a breakthrough. Honeybee venom kills hard-to-treat breast cancer cells within 1 hour, a new study has just come out. Fantastic.
What? Wait. Hold on. I'm sorry. Mm-hmm. I zoned out. Honeybee venom. Now, There's like a documentary I watched on Netflix once where people are stinging themselves intentionally because they think that it cures things. What cancer?
Okay. So, you know, if you keep asking me all these questions, it's going to be long to get through these.
I know, but I don't understand. I feel like this is important. What?
All right. So here's the thing. Australian scientists found that a compound in the venom called, I think I'm saying this right, is melittin, rapidly killed two hard to treat cancer cells. So basically what they're saying in this test, it's a really amazing test that the venom was extremely potent and that this venom or this component of the venom can completely destroy cancer cell membranes within 60 minutes. And this is related to breast cancer. So, hey, any treatment that can help breast cancer and breast cancer people that are going through it, oh, I'll take it. Good news.
Okay. Check.
All right. Next. Number two, another good one. There's a breakthrough on therapy related to lupus. It sends lupus patients into remission. It gives hope to cure all autoimmune diseases. I mean, what? Yeah, how amazing is that?
Wait, okay. What is it though?
So basically, five patients, there are four women and one man between the ages of 18 and 24, received these transfusions to cell therapy that was to treat lupus. And basically what happened was they saw that it, whatever this was in this compound was sending these people right into remission. So what they're saying on this study is that they're finding that they hope that this study will lead them into curing all autoimmune diseases.
What?
We'll take it.
Are you making this up or is this?
I am not making this up.
I don't know how I've never heard of these things.
I know. And I'm going to give you one last one.
Okay, give it to me.
Historic milestone. Alzheimer's drug slows cognitive decline by 27.
This I heard about.
In a phase 3 trial. I mean, I think everyone listening has known somebody with some form of Alzheimer. It's Alzheimer's, I should say. It's awful. Awful. Another good news movement over here. This is awesome. Yeah.
That last one, yeah, that's amazing. God.
Amazing.
And we can even tie it in to what I was obsessed with, which could be a medical breakthrough as well. Something that's non-medicated that can help you with anxiety. Because I heard a study that says that they think that a whole lot more Americans specifically actually struggle with anxiety than who are diagnosed.
Why just Americans? Why not everyone?
Probably because we're a really special people. I don't know.
We have listeners all over the world. Are there any other people in other countries with anxiety?
We've got our one Honduran who also might struggle with anxiety. But I'm just saying that what I read was about Americans specifically. That there's a whole lot more people running around this country with undiagnosed anxiety and stuff. So look, we all have stuff, but if there are these breakthroughs going on, whether it's an inhaler that's not medicated that can help you, or stinging yourself with a bee, or these, I mean, like good stuff, right?
Right. I mean, here's the thing. We absolutely love and appreciate every one of you, especially the one listener in Honduras. We see you. We know that divorce is hard. We know it's draining, and we know that the unknown can feel scary. Our goal is to offer some guidance and sometimes some humor.
That's exactly right, you guys. Hang in there. We're with you. We know that sometimes it's a day-by-day situation. Some days it's an hour-by-hour. But you can do this. We believe in you. We have got you, and you have got this. Before we wrap, make sure that you are following us. Go to Instagram at How Not to Suck at Divorce, or you can go to our website, www.hownottosuckatdivorce.com. What did I leave out, Morgan?
No, nothing except for the fact that we are here. Send us a message. We'll get you referrals, and ultimately we'll help you not to suck at divorce. Because remember this, you may be struggling, but we've got you.